Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear how different businesses and employees are transitioning back into work now that the state has shifted to a safer-at-home phase and more things are opening up. Then we're partnering with the Netherlands Public Library to bring you their new oral history series, Ned Speaks. This morning, we'll hear from one Netherlands resident on the history of the local food pantry. We continue our look at local food issues and visit an urban goat farm that's coming up with creative ways to showcase their baby goats during the pandemic. Then we'll round out this morning's magazine with Trends Diary from the Community Foundation of Boulder County. Today, we'll hear about feeding frontline workers. Fiona Foster is your host for Connections. That's at 8:30. Then Meredith will be in for the Morning Sound Alternative, starting at 9:30. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Governor Polis has declared that today be a day to honour those who have died from COVID-19. Steve Miller has more.
The state capitol, along with cities, counties, and other organizations, will be turning their lights red at 7 p.m. to honor the more than 1,000 Coloradans who have died. The state is encouraging buildings and businesses across the state to turn their lights red as well, and for police and fire departments to turn their lights on at 7 p.m. for 1 minute. Coloradans can participate by wearing their protective mask for a minute of silence to show that they are doing their part to save lives. Governor Polis said that the main reason Coloradans will honor the over 1,000 lives lost here in the state was because victims' family and friends were not able to have proper last rites and funerals for them. He added that this is also for friends and neighbors who are struggling in these trying times, and to let them know that they are not alone. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Denver Mayor Michael Hancock announced on Thursday that thousands of city employees would have to take 8 furlough days by the end of the year due to significant budget cuts as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. First responders like police and firefighters would be exempt. The furloughs are expected to save the city about $16 million. Overall, the city is facing a $226 million shortfall. The Denverite reports that the city anticipates a 10.5% loss of revenue for its general fund. To put that into perspective, the loss to the general fund in 2008 and 2009 during the recession amounted to about 6.5%. 12 of the 13 city council members and the mayor will take 8 voluntary furlough days. Candy Sidibaka, who represents Denver's District 9 on City Council, said in a statement on her Facebook page that she would not take voluntary furlough days because, coming into 2020, she said, Denver's legislative branch had already been operating on an anemic budget. She continued that now we're being told by a separate branch of government to cut our office budgets during a time when we must provide more support to constituents. Sidibaka concluded her statement saying that rather than surrendering funds that will not make any difference to the mayor's excessive budget, she said she would keep her limited resources in District 9, which has the highest concentration of homelessness and poverty in the city, in order to serve the more than 75,000 constituents there. Highs today in the upper 60s, rain later in the day, warming up for the weekend. Tomorrow highs in the mid 70s and getting to the low 80s by Sunday and even to the upper 80s early next week. Since the state and local communities began transitioning into a safer at-home phase, businesses and employees are figuring out how to operate during the ongoing pandemic. Whitney Holland, who is a student at CU Boulder, brings us this report.
The spread of COVID-19 has caused the entire world to shut down. Many people have been affected by the spread of the virus, and life in quarantine has been an adjustment for everyone.
Thank you for calling Meyer Dental. Due to the recent coronavirus outbreak, our office is currently only seeing patients on an emergency basis. If this is a dental emergency, please press 1 to page the doctor.
Due to many businesses having to close up shop because of COVID-19, dental hygienist Rachel Passerini is just one of many workers who have been let go for the time being.
Our office was closed officially as of Wednesday, March 18th, per the American Dental Association recommendations. In terms of communication from our managers and CEO, they have been on top of it week by week, updating us on changes as well as helping us make sure we're okay financially throughout this time, which has been fantastic. I'm very thankful for the office I work for because they have been looking out for each and every one of their employees since day one.
Although Rachel has been temporarily let go, she was lucky enough to receive unemployment benefits.
Throughout this quarantine, I have luckily been able to go on unemployment, which has been extremely helpful while I'm at home. My bosses have been incredibly generous in that regard to allow us to all apply for unemployment while we are on a temporary furlough.
As stay-at-home orders have been extended to ensure public safety, so has Rachel's return date. As she is eager to return to work, she's also aware that there may be some challenges with her return.
According to our office, as of yesterday, we will be returning the week of May 11th. We were planning on returning the week of May 4th, but Governor Polis did push out the date for stay-at-home order. So we decided to push ours out one more week to open the office. I think it will be challenging in terms of infection control. Every dental office has a very high standard for infection control, and we follow OSHA standards in order to keep ourselves as well as our patients healthy and safe. However, because of this pandemic, those standards are going to change essentially. It's going to be challenging to get into a new routine of using these new requirements and this new equipment while being able to stay on time and treat our patients appropriately. I think it's going to take some understanding and patience from both sides in order to slowly gain a new normal in terms of the dental world. So we are understanding. We know that it's going to be a slow process. We are hoping our patients are also very understanding and patient with us as we go through these changes and move forward. Luckily, we'll be back in and able to treat patients in the next week and a half or so, and we're really looking forward to it.
Alex Dietz works as a financial services consultant for the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association, otherwise known as TIAA.
Thank you for calling TIAA. My name is Alex Dietz. How may I help you?
While many people have lost their jobs, some people are continuing to work through the pandemic. As stay-at-home orders have become more serious, Alex has found that not much has changed in his job other than being able to work from home.
Once we made the switch to working from home, the job ended up not being much different. We still take calls, and our customers have no idea we're working from our homes instead of our office down in Denver. Everything's running pretty smoothly. Through our electronic systems, we're all able to communicate with each other pretty much as normal. The biggest thing that we've had to deal with, though, is learning how to deal with the CARES Act that was passed by the government a few weeks ago. That act made a lot of changes to the way that people deal with their retirement plans, and we've all essentially had to relearn our jobs over the last month. As of right now, there is no plan for us to return to our office. We're all still scheduled to work remotely for the foreseeable future, but that could change at any moment. I've even heard rumors that they might make working from home permanent.
Although Alex still has a job, he has faced some challenges with the changes that were occurring so quickly.
The biggest thing that happened was before we were all moved to our remote jobs that we are now, TIAA put together very, very quickly a lot of crash course training that we all had to do. TIAA had to run out and rent hundreds, maybe even thousands of laptops and have our IT configure all of them properly so we'd be able to do our jobs remotely. If we were to return to the office, I don't think it would be a tough adjustment at all. The hardest thing for me would probably be making sure that I catch the bus on time.
Remember to follow social distancing guidelines. Whether you're working or not, it's important that we all stay strong and healthy.
Whitney Holland produced that report as part of the course Principles in Audio Production at CU Boulder. And we'll hear more news reports produced by CU students next week on The Morning Magazine. The Nederland Public Library has a new oral history project, Ned Speaks, and we're bringing you some of them here on KGNU's Morning Magazine. Today, we hear from Jeanette Keane-Taylor about the Nederland Food Pantry.
The leader in this whole process has been, I believe, the Nederland Food Pantry and the Nederland Area Seniors. Those are the two leaders. Also, Teens Inc. and several other local organizations that are ramping up to help, such as Wild Bear Nature Center. So the first thing was getting food to people who are unemployed and who are have no income all of a sudden, as well as the people who were already vulnerable and having food insecurity. So the food pantry changed to a just, we'll put a box of food in your car as you drive through, so we minimize touching. The Nederland Area Seniors ramped up to delivering meals throughout the entire Peak to Peak, from Black Hawk all the way to Ward, and even into Jamestown and Gold Hill. So 60-plus folks can get up to, I believe it's 14 meals a week if they have the storage capacity per person. And normally that's only available for vulnerable seniors who are economically vulnerable, but now it's just any senior who needs food can get it because they need to sequester help for health reasons. So the kitchen at the community center is just rocking. They are turning out all these meals, really good food. This isn't your MRE type food. This is excellent, well-crafted food. And getting it out to seniors, the food that the Nederland Food Pantry and the Allens Park Food Pantry and the Lyons Food Pantry and the Gilpin County Food Pantry are putting out is really pretty high quality, even though it's really tough for these food pantries to find food. They are having to shop and shop and shop to meet the demands. The demand on the Nederland Food Pantry right now is three times their normal demand. Plus, they are sharing food across the Peak to Peak with different organizations. Some of the organizations locally who are coming up with emergency cash and education alternatives, helplines, that sort of thing, are Teens Inc. Canyon Cares has been fabulous. Canyon Cares has been operating in Coal Creek Canyon for decades now. It started out as a small local fund to help people with auto repairs and emergencies, and is now ramped up to tens of thousands of dollars distributed every year to people who are desperate. And they have been fundraising like crazy, and they're helping people with rent, mortgage, utilities, car repair, just anything that they are desperate to get right now. All of this leads me to mention that what this community is. Many of us in our 60s and 70s swore by a book called Small is Beautiful by E.F. Schumacher that talked about how the smaller the community is, the more efficient the care of the entire community is. And that is exactly what's happening here. We're spread out over, you know, lots and lots of miles because the mountain communities are most of Western Boulder County and very rural, but the numbers are small as far as the people are concerned, and we can watch each other. We can help each other. We can stand by each other at a time like this. Several ways we communicate, besides just, you know, calling across the fence to each other, are as flawed as it is. Facebook has been fabulous. My group that I put together 6 years ago called Nedheads has 4,000 members. And so this is a way we communicate with each other about where benefits can be available, are available, where they can get food, where they can get emergency cash assistance. And the other is our local newspaper, which not many small communities have local newspapers anymore. We've been really lucky that the Mountaineer is still around. The Peak to Peak Alliance has set up a network of helpers, including what we call the Mountain Resource Liaisons. Christy Vendetti here in Nederland and Rebecca Major in Lyons and Allens Park. These women are paid by their parent organizations, Our Center and EFA, to come up to the mountains and make sure that the communities are served. So we've got a lot of different processes happening, and a lot of very positive response to the COVID crisis, making sure that we're not letting our neighbors fall through the cracks.
That oral history by Jeanette Keane Taylor is part of the Ned Speaks Oral History Series. It's a project of the Nederland Public Library. Mountain Flower Dairy is a non-profit that was founded in Boulder in 2012. And they're right in the heart of the city, right by the iconic Longs Family Gardens. They're home to about 30 goats and one llama. Normally at this time of year, they'll be welcoming children on field trips. Well, the current pandemic means they've had to get creative. I spoke with Michael Montgomery, who's the herd manager at Mountain Flower Dairy.
As a nonprofit, we are a dairy. We do produce milk. However, our mission at its heart and core is to educate the community and connect people that otherwise would be lacking or miss this connection with animals and with the land. So yes, we are here to educate as much as we are here to humanely raise goats.
It does seem that in these times, so many aspects of life have now moved into a digital space, whether it's education or work. It seems very difficult to imagine how a goat farm could move into a digital space. And yet that is exactly what you have done. So give us a sense of how you're adapting to this digital world we're in now.
Right. Well, as a farmer and as a person that's not very savvy with technology, this has been quite something to adapt to. And having a goat on my head while I'm talking doesn't really help either. But we're doing as much as we possibly can, as quickly as we possibly can, like I said earlier, to remain in contact and remain engaged with our community. So to do that, things that we typically would be doing here in person, meaning we invite people to come for our noontime bottle feedings. We invite people to come, like I mentioned before, for farm tours and field trips. We're now offering all of those things virtually. So much of what we would have been doing in person, we're now doing via Zoom or the like. We've even gotten creative with offering Zoom cameos. So we have had several businesses schedule us to just pop into their either staff meeting or one of their official meetings and just bring along the farm and have animals and our llama on the Zoom call. So I think it's been not only a way for us to educate a little bit about what we're doing here, but just a way to lighten the mood.
In a more serious sense, you know, the current pandemic has really shone a spotlight on, well, in many ways, how disconnected we are in society from so many different things and how so many people are disconnected from each other. And a lot of people are looking at the environment as well. Do you have a sense that as an urban farm that you really have a role to play as we come out of this pandemic and really highlighting how we do need to look at all aspects of life and that we can't exist just in these urban settings, that the environment, urban farming, and of course, our food supply system has been hugely under the spotlight during all of this. I mean, it does seem that coming out of this or through as we're currently in the pandemic, that farms like yours actually have a really important role to play in maybe further connecting us with our food supply system or educating us on what it actually means to raise animals, to raise them humanely, and, you know, to have that type of agricultural environment right here in an urban area.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think when this all began, you know, it's now been several months, I think we all got a very, you know, slap in the face, just for lack of another term. We all got a very strong and good reminder of how fragile our food system actually is. And I think now more than ever, and we've seen this just from we offer milk, and I've seen this just from, you know, the past couple of weeks with people in and around Boulder who are expressing interest in becoming involved, becoming a member with the farm and getting a local product, because people are realizing how important it is to not only support these small farms, but to start to consume food that has been produced close to where we live. So I think now more than ever, we've gotten a great reminder of that. And we're even seeing that here with, you know, our relatively small herd share program. And the herd share is how people get raw milk. We distribute raw milk in a herd share model. So people have to come to the farm to pick up their milk versus us distributing milk through a market or a restaurant or anything like that. Legally, to distribute milk, you need to become a member of the farm and then come to the farm and pick up your milk. So I am, you know, searching for positives in all of the negativity that we've been surrounded with. And I am actually feeling really, really thankful that I get to do what I do every day. And I'm also thankful that people are starting to recognize smaller farmers and smaller food producers now more than ever before.
Well, how can people find out more about the work that you're doing at the nonprofit? Maybe the milk share, the herd share that you talked about, and really especially, how can you get a baby goat come and Zoom bomb you for your next staff meeting?
Good question. I think the best place to go to get information on everything we do and everything we're offering is our website. So it's mountainflowerdairy.com. They're easy to remember. We have information on all of our virtual programs that we're offering right now. And we also have a lot of information about our herd share and becoming a member and starting to get our milk.
Michael Montgomery, the herd manager at Mountain Flower Dairy in Boulder. It's time now for Trends Diary, a series we're bringing you every Friday morning here on KGNU in collaboration with the Community Foundation of Boulder County.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name's Kyle Judah, and this is my story of helping to feed the front lines in Boulder. It all started on March 20th, right as things were starting to get dire with coronavirus in Colorado. I saw a blog post from a team out in San Francisco who had started a similar program to gather donations from the community, direct them towards supporting local restaurants, and deliver fresh, hot, healthy meals to frontline hospital workers who are leading the fight against COVID-19. I retweeted the story and said, "Who's doing this in Colorado? I want to help make it happen." We had a little bit of back and forth with Vikas Reddy, Bradfeld, and others in the community. At 8 a.m. the next morning, I got a call from Vikas who said, "Hey, we're about to have a Zoom call with people who want to help make this happen." It came together remarkably fast. Everybody was just so excited and so pumped up to have this kind of impact in our backyard to support these local restaurants and our healthcare workers. It took us maybe 3 or 4 days to get Boulder Community Health Foundation on board and signed off on this partnership. And then we were kind of off to the races. The response has been overwhelming in the best sense of the word. Over the last month, we've now raised over $650,000 in donations from the community, many of it small dollar donations from community members just like you. This outpouring of support is going to provide 300 meals every day for the next couple of months to every staff member and clinician at Boulder Community Health. We're already planning to expand it and have to Boulder Fire and Police, to Open Space Rangers, to Clinica Family Health and Wardenburg Health Center, to senior care centers and other healthcare organizations servicing the parts of the community that really need it most in these troubling times. We've been absolutely inundated with emails from other restaurants who want to get involved and other hospitals and communities who want to set up similar programs from Denver and Fort Collins, Colorado Springs, and even a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from the city of Carmel, Indiana. Because this isn't something that's just localized to Boulder. Everywhere in the country is dealing with the exact same fallout from coronavirus. The hospitality industry has been decimated, and folks in every hospital are going to keep fighting this. This is our way and our community's way to give them the fuel they need to keep the fight going strong. You can learn more at feedthefrontlinesboulder.org.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
You can catch more of the Trends Diaries online at news.kgnu.org, and you can hear them every Friday right here on The Morning Magazine.